What's up, After Buzzers? Welcome to the season finale of Scientology in the Aftermath. Today we're going to be talking about two episodes, season 3, episodes 10 and 11, called Buying a Town Part 2 and Church and State. We're talking all things Clearwater and tax exemption. You don't want to miss it. Stay tuned.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
We've made it.
Season
I can't believe
three.
It. Was a long journey.
It was, but it was full of so many things.
So many things. And so many emotions.
Yes. Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
What's up, guys? As always, I'm your host, Taylor Gates. I am joined by my lovely co-panelist tonight.
Thank you. I'm Jackie Ray, guys. How you doing? How you feeling? Are you feeling culty or are you feeling upbeat?
I'm feeling, I don't really know. It's because it's bittersweet a little
bit. It is.
Like, I love learning from the show.
Right.
And so I'm like, wow, I'm going to have to.
Are you so in love with the learning that now you're ready to infiltrate?
No.
Still not. I tried. The whole season I tried.
We're still doing work here. We're spreading awareness via this podcast.
True.
Like I said, we have two episodes to talk about tonight. We have the second half of the Clearwater saga, I guess I would call it.
Yes.
And then this final Church and State, where we really dive into the IRS tax exemption. What were your thoughts on both of these episodes?
I mean, the Clearwater town was probably one of the most twilighty zones things I've ever seen. It was very, you know, especially there was that one scene, you know, we'll get into it a little bit later, but there was a one scene where they were being harassed by Scientologists on the one hand, and then people from the town on the other wanted to take pictures with Leah and telling her, thank you, we appreciate what you're doing. It was so odd.
Yeah. I thought that dichotomy was really, really interesting, too. And just that episode, just it's always weird to see Leah and Mike, like, footage of them from when they were in it, because they're so passionately against it now, and for good reason, of course. But we have to remember that they weren't always like that, and that gives them such a unique point of view. And so seeing this footage of Mike was really jarring in a way, because he doesn't really talk about his own involvement that much. That's not to say that he doesn't take responsibility for things he did, but actually seeing him in action was really, like you said, sort of twilight zone in a way. It was really insane. But let's start off by the jumping off point of this episode, who was Lisa McPherson. So she was a woman who was having sort of doubts, and her story was really interesting and disturbing because she got in this little tiny fender bender, and she just walked down the street naked saying that she needed this help and she needed someone to pay attention to her. What was your reaction when you heard that story?
So my initial thoughts when I first heard that one was I didn't entirely know what was going on with her. I didn't know if it was, you know, she had these doubts and she was in a predominantly Scientologist town and people weren't helping her because they knew she had doubts, or if she was really having some sort of mental breakdown. So I needed that story to develop, you know, a little bit more. But I mean, still to strip totally naked and, you know, not even just go topless. That was so obviously something is, you know, definitely, definitely wrong with her. And then for it to go from there to you're not even safe in a hospital was just, I know we've made it all the way to the end of this season, but it's still very difficult for me to process how this is happening.
It's so chilling. It is almost like a horror movie in ways because you're right. She's not even safe in a hospital. Like, we have the 10 Scientologists, which seems like crazy amount of overkill, but they always send those people out in numbers to take her from the hospital and lock her in the Fort Harrison Hotel for 17 days, which when someone's already mentally unstable, like, isolation is not something you ever want to do to them because that makes it so much worse. And they have no real doctors or people who know what they're talking about, you know, on site to help her at all. So things obviously just get a lot worse.
I was concerned that she didn't have family there either.
Yeah.
You know, 10 people walk in and there's no family members to say, I am so sorry, but you need to leave. And even the doctors tried to help her to stay. And again, it goes back to what we've heard time and time again. She could have said, you know, the doctors were there to try to protect her. So she could have said, no, I'm going to stay with them. But there was something inside of her that said, oh, you know, maybe I should go with them. Even though she knew she needed help. She knew she needed to take off her clothes in order to get help. But she didn't know that she needed to stay out of the church Scientology long enough. Yeah, it was weird.
I think that these two episodes paired really well, too, because there is that question of, well, why isn't the government getting more involved? Why aren't these, you know, firefighters and doctors taking more of a stand? And we kind of delved into that in the season finale, and that kind of gives a little bit of insight and shed some light onto the situation, which is just scarier and scarier the more that we keep watching this show. But another thing that Scientology does a lot that we've seen time and time again is they destroy records. So Miscavige, you know, not unusual, he orders the last 3 days of these records to be destroyed. And because essentially what they did was they, when she was in this really deteriorated state, there's a hospital 5 minutes away, and yet they make her drive 50 minutes to go see a Scientology, you know, approved and Scientologist doctor, which I found just disgusting. Because if someone's in that kind of state, you want them to get help as soon as possible. And yet it's the ego and the pride again. What did you think of sort of the sad ending of that story?
You know, I watch a lot of crime TV, so it rings. This is going to sound like a weird comparison, but in the Tupac case, it was a similar situation. There was a closer hospital that they could have taken him to when he got shot, and they drove him of something like 15, 20 minutes out the way to a different hospital. When something like that happens, you know the intent. Your intent is for this person not to make it, because when you are trying to help someone, your goal is to get them help as quickly as possible. People do that for total strangers, try to get them help as quickly as possible. This is someone you know. This is someone who's been in your organization for 15 years. And you say, ah, we know she's not in a good way. You've got 3 days of records. Caregivers kept records for three. The other thing about that before, you know, aside from the fact that it was jacked up that they drove her 15 minutes away, I still 50 minutes
like
away. Almost an hour. Yeah. And so, of course, she was dead on arrival. But the fact that the Church of Scientology always has to destroy records is crazy to me, because they either write it down or they tape it. So you have all this incriminating evidence that you have to go back and destroy.
Yeah, because they keep meticulous records.
Why? You know you're not doing the right thing. Don't write it down.
That's one of the most fascinating parts to me, is because they do. They log every single thing, which is just, like, you would think that would make them more susceptible to getting into trouble, but somehow they twist it and make it.
Right.
And they, you know, buy a lot of people off. And, like, again, that's why I think these episodes are paired well, is because in Lisa McPherson's case, they, you know, essentially bullied the autopsy sort of examiner to eventually change, you know, her cause of death, which is crazy.
But you can't stand up to, you know, again, and I know I've said this all season, but there's a lot of genius. You know, that's why the term evil genius is a real phrase, because there's a lot of genius that goes into a lot of evil plans. But you cannot, as an individual, battle an entity. You just can't. You just, your willpower, they mess up your entire life. Your whole existence all of a sudden becomes about battling this force that is so much bigger than you. And so, of course, she changed her story, you know, and I get it. People will probably be like, oh my God, she did the, if you've not battled a Goliath, you know what I mean? You just don't know how that feels. And I understand that she's probably, I mean, they didn't really get into her story, but I would just bet my last dollar that she's somewhere right now watching this, and she has a lot of regret about that. But at the end of the day, she had no resources to fight off the Church of Scientology.
Absolutely. And before we get into people who did have a couple more resources, because people did try to tell Lisa's story and sort of take this on, please tell us a little bit about what's happening at AfterBuzz, because this is our season finale.
This is our season finale.
That doesn't mean that we're going anywhere necessarily.
Yes, guys. I just want to thank you guys so much before we keep going, and tell you that we want to thank you for making us the ESPN of TV Talk. For us to continue to grow, though, we do need your help. And if you're on YouTube right now, which we do see a couple of you guys in the chat, please go ahead and give us a thumbs up right now. And if you are on iTunes, make sure you give us a 5-star rating. But no matter where you are, make sure you leave a comment so you can get involved in the conversation, because being a part of AfterBuzz TV, it really does mean so much to all of us, and we truly appreciate your support and doing and helping us do what we love. And don't forget to tell your friends, and make sure you come back here. This is our season finale. finale, but there's so many shows on AfterBuzz. Make sure you subscribe. And a special shout out right now to Ashley, who's in the chat, because she says that she is obsessed with this show. Agreed. And it means so much to her that we are doing this panel. And that's why we do it. We do it because you're obsessed like we're obsessed. And we just really want to thank you guys for being here with us on this journey. Yes, it's awesome.
And this show is just, it is truly so important. Because it's giving so much publicity and, mm-hmm. and education. Education is something they really stress in this season finale. And the show is definitely doing that for the public. And we just want to keep being a part of that conversation because it's so vital. Because it's destroying real people's lives
right.
in such a heavy and upsetting way. So on that note, let's talk a little bit about the civil case, because Lisa McPherson's family did eventually file this civil suit, which Miscavige viewed as this major threat. And kind of to make matters worse, there was something called the Lisa McPherson Trust that was set up right next to Miscavige's office. And that was headed by Bob Minton, who was this former international investment banker who wanted to just bring attention to this case. And I thought it was really interesting that they make sure to specify that he didn't have anything against Scientology necessarily. He just wanted to tell this girl's story. Unfortunately, Scientology did not view it that way at all, because they take everything as a sort of personal attack and view investigation as, you know, they get very defensive whenever there's any kind of investigation going on. And so naturally, they ruined this poor guy's life. And they tried to persuade the Nigerian government that he'd scammed them out of millions of dollars and froze his assets. What were your thoughts on this Bob Minton story? I thought it was one of the saddest that we'd seen.
Yeah, for me, it was sad on a lot of levels. One, because this man had absolutely no connection to Scientology. He had no connection to this young lady who lost her life. He just knew something had been done wrong. So this is what we've been hoping for all season, right? That somebody with some resources, an outside source, could stand up against, you know, the Church of Scientology. And he did. I think what really got me was Mike's involvement in destroying him, because I'm a pessimist when it comes to people. I'm not a pessimist when it comes to other things. But when it comes to people, it's hard for me to believe that people change at their core, because I've seen it time and time again that people are like, oh, I'm different. And then, yeah, you're acting different. You know what I mean? So to kind of see, and even during this episode, Mike was very, when his friend was crying, when he started talking about it, and he had to take a second, because he really looked up to Bob. And I could see how it's easy to look up to Bob. He just came out of nowhere and was like, hey, we got to help this town stand up to this Goliath. And I could see how you would get attached to him and how you could, you know, really be rooting for him and really admire him. And it was very painful for him to have that loss. And then Mike, although he did take responsibility for, you know, his involvement, we've seen him cry during this series. And to see him kind of sit there stoic bothered me.
Really?
It bothered me.
See, I didn't read it that way at all. Like, I read it as he felt super guilty, like, about this, and very, very regretful, and maybe, like, almost stunned that, you know, when you're faced with something, then it's a mistake that you made and that you have to live up to, or, you know, live with. And you just, you have to face it, but it's like you can't even cry about it because it's just almost,
it's
hurts
too much.
Too much. Yeah, it's too much to even bear and think about it. So that's the way I kind of interpreted it. But I just, hearing him speak about Bob really touched me, because again, you could see what a good guy Bob was. And they said, you know, he was a flawed man. He had his faults. But the fact that he was willing to be friends with Mike, even after all of this, like, that speaks volumes about who you are as a
Absolutely.
Person. And the fact that it just had to end. I mean, he was suicidal at the end. He died before ever. I mean, Mike got to apologize to him, but they never got to sort of meet up again. And he always lived in fear that Scientology was going to come back and hurt him again. It was just heartbreaking.
Yeah, it definitely is. And I totally get what you're saying, but for me, if somebody was sitting across from me who had genuine love for somebody that I ultimately, my actions led to their demise, I don't know if I could just sit there stoically. I just, you know, I'd have to be moved, or I maybe need to take a break, or maybe one single something. And so I don't know, it just troubled me that he didn't have that emotion.
I'm wondering if there were things that were like sort of cut for time or edited. You know what I mean? Right, right. Just because I don't know. I am so pro Mike Render after.
I know. Don't get me wrong. I love him. And sidebar, you are aging amazingly. By the way, you look really good. I think he looks better now than he did in the younger pictures. I don't know. I mean, just sidebar,
Mike. If you want to come in for season four, hey, we will shower you with these.
Definitely. So shout out to you. But it just, you know, I get it. And he's definitely trying hard. And then, you know, the chat again says that they don't know if they're going to come back for a fourth season. But even if they don't, we're comforted by the fact that Leah and Mike will never give up. And they make me feel that we're fighting together. And that's good, you know. And I hope that if anyone is in the Church of Scientology and they're watching this, they do know now that they have a way out.
Absolutely. And it's great because beyond just the show, they are using their social media for a lot of this too, which can reach a whole different audience and just, you know, keep doing the conversation, you know, whether the show was airing or not. It's like 24/7 of releasing this crazy news and these stories because there's so many that you could have 100 seasons and not everyone's would be able to be told. And so it's just very important that people continue to speak. And another person that continued to speak was Mark Bunker, who I want to talk about briefly, because his story was crazy too. And it was just another case of Scientology going to these extreme lengths to make people's lives miserable. He, again, didn't really have that much involvement with Scientology. He was just this documentary filmmaker, and Scientology planted people left and right because there was the 10-foot rule because he had a restraining order from like 20 years ago. And so every time he goes anywhere, Scientology sends these fleets of people out so he can't be there peacefully. And they kind of, I mean, made a little fun out of it at the end of this episode by going to that park that Scientology says is public, but like, it's theirs in the fine print, and they can kick whoever they want off of it. Yeah, I know that you liked this scene. Tell us what you liked about it.
I mean, I don't know if you're going to be able to relate, but as a Black person, seeing non-Black people getting the police called on them for no reason just made my entire day. I was like, okay, how you like that? But
I don't know why I wasn't expecting that answer, but that's hilarious.
So yeah, so I thought it was hilarious, but again, I did, especially since he still lives there. It's like, you know, it's a park. And, you know, it's just the level of petty of the Church of Scientology, though, dude. Like, come on, it's a park. And for them to be sitting there, and then it was the police. So here's where the second thought I had about that scene was, how high does this go? People are getting paid off on literally government levels. Someone high up in the IRS is getting paid off. Clearly, this police department is being paid off, because the fact of the matter is it wasn't just these beat cops that were harassing mm-hmm. them. The supervisor showed up with this documentation in hand. And even he said, it's, you know, this park where they're sitting wasn't even there when this injunction was created.
They tore down a checkers for it.
Yeah. So I just feel like that law is, you know, you can't enforce this now. This wasn't even here when this, and I wonder what the statute of limitations is on that, you know? So there was all these questions that were in my head, but the fact of the matter is people age, you know, people, their looks change, and this is over 20 years old, but you still recognize him to know, hey, go get that injunction. We got to kick. That's ridiculous. That is so petty.
It's crazy. And it's cowardly, too, in a way, because they issued this trespass warning. They were supposed to come down and hand it, but they knew they were filming, so they're like, we're not going to do that. Like, come on, show your face if you're going to, you know, stir up the pot like this.
And that's why you could tell, because when the cops were kind of standing off, you knew that they wanted to go in, you know, full force, but you kind of saw people pointing, and they were always pointing like right at a camera. They're like, maybe not.
It's like their bodyguard in a way. Like, right? They can kind of do whatever they want since they have this whole network and these cameras behind them. And it's like, I don't feel bad
at all.
That's exactly what they're doing, just with their tax exempt status in a way.
But then that family, and then that's when I was like, this is a crazy town. Then that family comes up, husband, wife, and the little kid, and they're literally thanking her. And I remember him saying, thanks for trying to help our town. Dude, I would move.
Me too.
There's no way.
I'm shocked that people are still staying here. people who, like, not even just, like, casual people who don't love Scientology, like, people that are harassed by them are staying there. Just nuts. But, like, good on them. They want to make their town better.
I get it. I mean, I get the fight. Trust me, I get the fight. But, and it's a beautiful town.
It is.
It seems so pretty. And so I get it, but I just don't know how long that fight would stay in me. I think my fight would leave the second I had a kid. Because, I mean, no.
And it's like your whole life, you're marked with this in a way just because of who your parents are. Crazy. So that was the Clearwater episode, the end of that little saga, which I found one of the most fascinating things we've ever seen on the show, personally. Like, that town was just a whole, like, little sample of, like, it's a case study in a way of, like, what can happen.
And again, part of me thinks it's genius, right? Because my dad used to always tell me, he's like, you know, you can't control the world, but you can control your world. You can control, you can't control what happens at work all the time, but you can control where you go home, the peace that you have in your own environment. You can control your circle of friends. You can control these things. So in essence, I'm not mad at them for trying to buy a town, you know, maybe an abandoned town, though. Don't try to come into a town that already exists and kick people out. But I'm not mad at them for trying to buy a town. It's just that you are destroying lives to do it.
Yeah.
And that's the crazy part to me. You know, it's just, with no shame.
No, none at all. It's absolutely nuts. Let's dive a little bit more into this sort of IRS tax exemption status, because this has been sort of ongoing theme of the season. And so the fact that we really honed in on it, I think, was an appropriate way to sort of wrap it all up. But there's a lot that goes into this that I think we still don't quite know, because it's like a very complicated sort of process. But basically, 1992 is when things got really, really frantic and Scientology decided to buckle down and really kind of do anything in their means possible to get this tax exempt status. They'd been trying for a decade, but 1992 is the year that they went kind of even more extreme. And Miscavige and Rathbun went to the building and demanded to meet with the commissioner. They sent in this application that equated the IRS with Nazis. It was a whole big thing, but eventually in 1993, they did gain this status and had this big celebration. And then they kind of go back and dissect how exactly they got there and whether or not this organization even fits into being tax exempt. I found it very upsetting, just the line, like, it's kind of been implied the whole time, but then when they said, like, everyone else's tax dollars are basically going to fund this organization, I got really angry because I had never thought of it that way. Was that just me, or did you also get really mad at that?
I like what you said earlier about it's great that they had these two episodes together because of how they tied in, because I didn't even think of that until that guy said that. And then I literally went back to Clearwater and I was like, hold up. The people in that town are paying taxes that the Church of Scientology is benefiting from. I am not entirely sure. Burn it down. You know, do something. This is crazy, because now the Church of Scientology is getting, they're not benefiting the community, but the people in the community have to pay taxes to get government benefits. It's insane to me.
Yeah, when I think tax exempt, and just because I'm not like a person who super, like, understands finance, like, I'm gonna be honest, I don't. So I'm like, oh, they just don't have to pay taxes. But that's not even true. It's that everyone else is helping them do what they do in a way, which should make everyone super, super angry, I think. If you have, you know, research this at all and see that they're not just not helping, they're hurting people, and we are being forced to kind of contribute to that.
It's weird because, I mean, I know I'm a sports fan, but, you know, the NFL was tax exempt up until 2014, 2015, which is because it's a, you know, like a $10 billion, maybe they want to be up to $25 billion by 2020 or 2027 or something like that. But it's a $1 billion a year industry. So even though the individual teams are not, they pay taxes, but the NFL as a whole still is this billion-dollar umbrella, and they were tax exempt until 2015. But the caveat there is, though, the NFL made it mandatory. So each team, it is mandatory for you to do community outreach, give back to the communities. It's part of, you have to do it if you have a team in the NFL. So I know people are pissed, and rightfully so. The NFL should have been paying taxes. That's just too much money. But at the same time, it's the exact opposite of the Church of Scientology. They have self-regulated that and made it mandatory to have all these like donations and stuff. So, and again, it seems really easy for the Church of Scientology to kind of combat all of this negativity. Like just to take a step back and say, okay, you know what? Let's stop. We've got our tax exempt. Whoever we're paying off, we can keep paying off. Let's at least try to look good and give back to the community just for no other reason than to shut people up. I just don't understand why they don't do that.
Yeah. Well, because they did mention, I like that you, like, they can buy anyone off. And I like that you mentioned that because they mentioned safe pointing, mm-hmm. which I thought was a really odd term in a way. And so they get opinion leaders who are like the police and the firefighter and the doctors and everyone with any kind of substantial influence to be on their side by any means necessary. So they can sort of just make them their puppets in a way. And I guess I had always kind of known that in the back of my mind because I'm like, there's no way they could get away with this if they didn't have the government on their side.
Absolutely.
And so the fact that they're smart, they are smart. In a really scary way. I don't know that saving all these records is smart, but the fact that you know who to go to and how to manipulate them so that they will be, you know, compliant with what you want is horrifying. You know, I should have that kind of power.
I think what's really scary about that whole thing is that we all have a price. Mm. And, you know, when I think of doctors and lawyers, I think of people who are already financially well off. So why would they need? But apparently they do need, or they want at least. And so it's unfortunate, I think, because it does speak to the human spirit a little bit, because you have to, I know that I don't make as much as whatever doctor, lawyer, or politician that they're paying off, but I just don't think, unless, and I will say this, and this is why I understand some of the IRS people saying, yes, if you leave us alone, we will back out of this. Because I do understand it. I mean, I'm a single person right now. It's just me that I have to take care of. But if I had a family, if I had kids, and this organization came to me and said, hey, you can either help us out or we're going to destroy your life, I don't even know if I would think twice about it.
Yeah.
Because I have other people to take care of.
Yeah, they use not only the money, but like these fear mongering tactics. And that is what sets it sort of over the edge. So, okay, if money doesn't work, then we'll use this by any means necessary policies mm-hmm. that we have in place. And it's not even just encouraged, like it's an actual policy they have.
Right.
Which should be enough to make it so they're not tax exempt. But I did like that they sort of made it very obvious that, hey, this can be considered a religion, and that's fine. I have no doubt that you believe in this, but that doesn't mean that you necessarily get to be tax exempt. And they even broke it down in the case of money, too, because they're like, well, other churches are allowed to make money and have donations. But the fact they pointed out that this had scaled so fast that it's not even proportional, like, there's no way they could have made $3 billion in a few decades. I thought it was really smart to break that down, too, because I think that's been a question that we've even talked about before. Like, I mean, other churches also make money, so where's the line? But the fact, they're right. There's no way they could have made $3 billion in this amount of time, and there's no reasonable relationship between the work that they're doing and the money that's coming in.
Yeah, and the other thing that gets me is that it's basically religion for sale. Mm. You know, Mike talked about that, about how everything, you can't even practice the religion if you're not paying for something. And I love what Leah said. She was like, yeah, I feel like one day they're going to have a Memorial Day on your eternity sale. And that's unfortunate because, and again, I just, you know, and I've admitted this several times on this show, I don't understand the mindset. I don't understand, because to me, when I think of religion, I think of something that gives you enlightenment, something that makes you think that there's something bigger than you, something that encourages you and lifts up your spirit. I don't think of something that says, if you don't give me your money when you walk in this building, you're not going to reach this level. That is weird.
It's very much a commercialized type thing. And honestly, it does make sense to me, just because I think that we're seeing this in a little bit less malicious way, like on Instagram with these influencers selling like social media courses.
Yeah.
And all of these, you know, $400 seminars. Like, in a way, it's sort of the same thing. Like, people think that the more that you pay, like, the more value you're getting out of things nowadays. I think that's a really common sort of conception that people have.
Right.
And so Scientology is using that to their advantage and using their public relations and their marketing to show, hey, yeah, you have to pay this money, but like, look at the value that you get.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that it's a very much a modern day religion,
yeah,
organization
term.
In a way.
Yeah.
Which I don't know. That's just what it's kind of dawned on me throughout this season, especially with the whole, you know, monetary focus that they've
had.
Right,
right.
But I would want to end this little recap by talking a little bit about Yolanda Williams, who was the San Francisco Police Department member and also former Scientologist. And I think that her words are so, so important, and her story is so vital to understanding how this all works, because she was in this cult, and she calls it a cult straight up, and kept it a secret for so long. I think she said like 15 years from her fellow police officers, because there is such a stigma and people assume that it's your fault when you're the victim of it. And it is hard to understand unless you've actually been through it. And so she just thinks that there needs to be training for these police officers and education placed on what to do if you encounter a cult-like situation or if people are being forced to do things against their will. And I thought that was really smart, because I think that we kind of take for granted that we know so much because we watch the show. But had we not viewed the show, I think that we would have the same sort of misconceptions.
I still think you have to have a level of empathy, though.
Yeah.
Too, because I know just from personal experience, you know, unfortunately, I do know some women that have been victims of domestic dispute. And then, you know, there was that side of me that was like very comforting at first, but then there was a part of me that was like, you know what, do whatever you do, because you could leave. You're a grown woman, you could leave. So you do lose it a little. So I could totally see, you know, again, like to your point, a police officer going into a situation and then, you know, maybe at that moment realizing this is wrong, these people are definitely being abused, I need to help. And then maybe once or twice try to help. And then on that third time, they still say the same thing. Like, we're here of our own free will. Okay, well, then stay here. You know, I could see you just dialing out. Because, I mean, how long are you going to push an adult to get out of an abusive situation? So I think it's really not only the education but you have to empathize as
well. Yeah, instill that sense of, like, sensitivity in a way. I think that's a great idea to kind of make those things go hand in hand, not only educating about the red flags, but educating about the psychology in a way too, because I think you're right. One without the other is not really that helpful. It needs to be this combined
total
sort of
package,
thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think that wraps up the recap portion of this, but we mentioned the NFL, and I think that brings us really a great segue into our special segment, which you are going to be taking over. Tell us about our little celebrity connection this week.
We are going to flip flop this week, and I'm going to handle the celebrity. Now, you guys, if you don't know, I am a huge sports fan. So, you know, the Rams and those other guys. No, I'm not a fan. But, you know, they played in the Super Bowl this past weekend. Marshall Faulk, who's he's a Hall of Famer, he actually played for the Rams for a while. He was on, I saw him on the Scientology Instagram. I do follow them just because I'm curious, y'all.
That's their tagline, Jackie!
They're reeling me in. But I do follow them on Instagram, and they posted this. This is the first, this picture was the first I saw of it, and I was like, is that Marshall? And then I read through it, and they said that Marshall was on. This is the Fox Morning News. So this is Fox and Friends. This is prime time. This is seen across the country. So I see this post, and I'm like, let me dig a little deeper. So if you don't know, the Super Bowl has a media day, which opens up the Super Bowl so that all the press can go. And then they have the media week. Marshall was on the circuit, literally on the circuit. I don't. Can we play that a little bit? Like, this is him on the show.
He can play as long as he wants.
Who's
going to
win the game?
I'm going for the Rams. I would like to see
you
the Rams.
I have no choice.
Let's talk about your partnership. You're partnering with the Foundation for a Drug-Free World.
Yes.
That's a pretty broad thing. What's your goal?
Well, just educating people. I just think about all the information that there is in the world when you want to learn about something. Why not, if you're young, learn what's going to happen. If you're an adult and you want to indulge, understand what it is that you are doing when you're indulging in
especially
something.
The age of legalized
pot. Let's educate.
Where do you stand on that?
It's to each their own. I say no, but to each their own. But educate yourself if you choose to indulge.
And this so that sounds really, great, right? Yeah, that sounds great. But see, the thing that you don't really see in that is if you dive deeper into this, this is not just recreational drugs. This is all drugs. This is if you need ADD medicine. This is
postpartum
depression. It is all drugs. So on the surface, it sounds great. It sounds like, hey, don't smoke weed. Don't do whatever, meth. It sounds great on the surface, but if you dig deeper, it's something else. And then he went on to say later, he was like, this is the largest non-governmental anti-drug information and prevention program in the country. He qualifies it by saying over 500,000 booklets were distributed during the Super Bowl.
Whoa.
Crazy, right?
That is actually really
so if
crazy.
You want to get a little bit more crazy, did you know that the Church Scientology, now to have a 30-second commercial in the Super Bowl was $5.1 million. Church Scientology.
Why can they do that?
Because they're tax exempt. They have a commercial. Let's check it out.
Let's play this.
Production starts off
quality.
All epic.
Yeah, know, like, bomb.
In a world.
It's like planet Earth.
Science.
It's funny how it does look a little dated still, though. Everything looks a little dated.
Yeah, because, you know, L. Ron Hubbard's mind.
Imagine technology.
But the voice is great.
Spirituality.
It is. It's very soothing.
Combining.
It's like, that sounds awesome.
And that's fantastic. Church and science? Now what could be better than that?
That everything you ever imagined.
I love how generic the clips are too, though. It's like a field, some water.
I just expect Will Smith to walk out of a spaceship, though, like in next Independence Day. Right, wait for it. Wait for it.
Spiritual.
Okay.
Technology.
Sounds great.
And Scientology.org.
How genius is that, though, to have Marshall Faulk kind of start this whole thing and then land with the commercial?
That is, you're right. They brought it home.
I'm telling you.
So my news connects a little bit with this because right. I saw this organically. I didn't even search for this research.
Okay.
Thank you. Sorry. I got ahead of myself. I'm really excited about this. I saw this pop up on my Twitter timeline. I don't follow Scientology or any of
shade.
That
shade. She's throwing shade.
Because it scares me for good reason. But so there's been a lot of beefs between like Wendy's and McDonald's. Like,
right,
different...
I love that.
I do too. But 2019 is the year of peanuts. That's right, just peanuts versus Scientology. The peanuts brand, Mr. Peanut, threw some major shade. For people who are listening to audio, you should honestly go check it out. Just go to Mr. Peanut's Twitter account. And it says, watching the Scientology ad like .. And it's Mr.
Okay,
Peanut
I have to see this.
Stepping right away. I just screenshot it so you
won't
be able
to see
it live. Oh, it's
just a screenshot. So he what, like scoots out of the shot?
He scoots out of the shot with this like scared expression and it's epic. And I just like... Props to that social media person. Props to the social media team that approved that.
Right.
That is really risky, but... Honestly, amazing.
I mean, the Super Bowl was kind of boring, so...
That spiced it up.
Right, yeah.
That truly spiced it up. What a piece of news. What an age that we are living in. Where
what a way
like
to end
happen.
A season, though,
honestly,
is with a
true.
Super Bowl appearance. That's crazy.
That is crazy. I personally hope that there is a season four. There's so
too.
Much still more to cover. All of these untold stories. Yeah, and I want to come back and hang out with you guys and talk about
yes.
this because it's just so interesting. And I think that there is real change in the air. And I think
I
it's
going to so.
Happen sooner rather than later.
I hope so. And I hope it doesn't have to, because here's the thing about laws and usually like when anything changes, it's because something really bad has happened. So I'm hoping that nothing... I mean, we've already known that people have lost their lives, but I'm hoping that that doesn't have to repeat itself on a mass level or something like that. So I hope that we get change quickly and everyone gets out safely. I don't want to see any kind of mass.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? I just don't want to see it.
Fight the good fight and, you know, hopefully it will pay off. And I think that it is. I feel it, you know. I feel
and
it
if not, they got us next season.
They got us next season. Guys, thank you so much for sticking with us through this entire season three. It was just a pleasure to
been
learn
a fun
with
journey.
You and speak with you. But you don't have to, you know, lose us forever. Where can they find you on social media?
Yes, once again, guys, I'm Jackie Ray. You can follow me on all things social media at JRayTheFanatic. And I am here on Mondays for one of my favorite shows called The Passage. And then on Thursdays, I'm here with Supernatural.
Awesome. Thank you
so much.
I
like that Supernatural, like,
yes,
weird stuff.
The way, yeah, of course. I mean, that's why you did this show.
It is.
You guys can find me on Twitter at @Alphaba_Ann, on Instagram at @Taylor_Gates_. I also host Good Trouble every Tuesday at 8 o'clock. Be sure to check that out. We will miss you guys. We will possibly see you for season 4. And thank you guys just so much for watching this season.
You guys
and
are amazing.
And we'll see you around. Buzz you later.
Buzz you later.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.